Hey, Nerd Fitness readers, listeners, viewers, I'm here with a personal mentor of mine who has since become good friend, travel hacking extraordinaire, New York Times best-selling author, and one of the nicest, most, one of the coolest guys I know, Chris Guillebeau. What's going on, man?
Dude, thank you so much. Awesome intro.
Yeah, you can pay me later.
Yeah.
So for our viewers that aren't currently familiar with your work, can you give us just like a quick, you know, 2-minute spiel? Who the heck are you and what the hell are you doing here?
Sure. I am a writer, traveler, and entrepreneur. I'm fortunate to have an amazing community of people all over the world, just kind of like the Nerd Fitness community. I don't know where to begin. Like I started traveling 10 years ago. I really love travel. And I kind of turned that into a quest to go to every country in the world. In the beginning, it was just a personal quest. I wasn't blogging about it. Didn't have books or anything. But then I did start blogging about it, did begin to publish books, started a few businesses, have a blog called The Art of Nonconformity. I host an event every year in Portland called the World Domination Summit, which we've been fortunate to have Steve Kam at. Is it every year? Is that right?
Yeah, I've been every one of them.
Awesome. That's cool. So you're locked in for life.
I'm in, man. You can't get rid of me, even if you wanted to.
A lifetime pass or something, you know, $5,000 and you come like forever, you know.
Don't tempt me, dude. I'd do it.
That's awesome. No, I guess I'm just fortunate. I have a great life. I'm really excited about what I'm doing. I do what I love, you know, pretty much all the time.
That's great. So, I mean, the reason we are doing today's interview because you have a book that's ready to come out, which I currently have right here, called The Happiness of Pursuit. This the entire book is about this concept, quests and journeys. And I'd love to talk about, you know, quests and journeys have been around since recorded history began, whether it's in the Bible or all the way up through video games. I think even in the book you mentioned Super Mario Brothers and the quest of, you know, going to try to save a princess unless she's not in the right, you know, that she's in the other castle.
Right.
Yeah. Talk about why you feel like quests are so important to you and how quests, you know, the importance of quests, I guess, for people, and you know, the benefits that people can derive from actually starting their own journey.
Yeah, great. So as you mentioned, quests have been a part of the human story, you know, for a long time. It's not just my story. It's like, it's something that we're all interested in. We're all fascinated in the concept of a long journey that leads to something. You know, a quest is something that has a destination. It's not just like a rambling journey. There's often a lot of rambling involved, but there is a destination. You're trying to get to it, but you're not supposed to get to it too quickly. You know, it's supposed to take a certain amount of time, just like in Mario Brothers. You know, like you don't actually want to rescue the princess in the first level. It'd be kind of disappointing if you did. Like, you want to keep going. You're like, okay, what, 6, 7? Okay, 8 times. On the 8th time,
here we go.
I can do it. And so in my life, I'd always just loved traveling. As I mentioned, I loved going to new places. I really felt alive when I was in different cultures and I felt challenged, and I'd always been kind of an introvert just doing my own thing. So like when I was traveling out in the world, it was a good, you know, eye-opening kind of thing for me. But traveling on its own, as good as it became a lot better when I combined traveling with goal setting. And I've always been a big list maker. I love writing things down. I write down my tasks every day. I write down ideas, random stuff, you know. And so I came across this idea of like, okay, a quest. Like, let's not just travel to a bunch of countries. Let's go to every country in the world. When I did that, it gave the whole thing so much more structure to me. So to fast forward a bit, you know, I wrote the book. I talked to lots of other people who've undertaken quests, including Steve Kam, and wanted to understand, okay, benefits. You talked about the benefits. How does a quest improve our lives? And that's the central message of the book, is that there's lots of things that can make you happy. Something that can bring purpose and meaning to your life is a quest, right? If you're pursuing something that you love, but attaching a goal to it and giving it some structure.
Very cool. So you just talked about giving it some structure. You know, when you play a video game, your quest is very conveniently laid out for you. Go from level 1 to level 2. You know, go to this particular location and defeat this guy to get this item. It's easy for you to kind of see this progression. How does somebody go about taking this idea of a quest and journey and actually applying structure, putting an outline to it? How do they make it something that they can then go through on a step-by-step basis instead of this massive, oh, I have to do everything at once, or I have this big quest that I don't know how to break down?
Great. Well, making it specific is hugely helpful. Just as you alluded to, with the game, you have the structure. So in my case, like, I'll tell you my case and a couple other people's as well. Like, early on, I was just started blogging. I was like, hey, I'm going to go to every country in the world. Isn't this awesome? And I thought like the whole world would be like amazing, you know, and some people were, but other people were like, oh, that's stupid, you know, like, right? Like, that's so dumb, you know. And one of the people who said it was so dumb, this guy who left like this long, you know, anonymous blog comment, And he had this quote that said, well, going to every country in the world, all it takes is enough time and enough money, you know? And so at first I was like, ah, oh, what an asshole, you know, right? But then actually, like, I started thinking about it later, right? And I started unpacking it a little bit. I'm like, okay, so forget about that guy. Let's think about the actual comment. You know, there's actually some value in this kind of thinking. There's actually some value in saying, okay, what are the steps? How much time will this take? How much money does it require? What are the other costs? There's probably some intangible costs. There's probably some uncertainties, you know? And I've always kind of gravitated toward that kind of logical thinking, just like making the lists. Mm-hmm. So something that helps a lot when you're trying to figure out what is my quest? What is my adventure? How am I going to proceed along this path is to make it specific, is to think about, okay, what are those costs? What is the time and money? You know, what am I really trying to achieve here? And how can I give it, you know, that functionality, that platform? That helped me a lot, actually, when I started thinking about it.
Okay, very cool. So as you're talking through these things, you talked about how every day you have a list. As a result of that movie that came out the years ago, The Bucket List, it seems like everybody and their mother these days has a bucket list. Or everybody wakes up on January 1st and makes a list of 15 things they're going to do during the year, and then they officially accomplish none of them. How do people break that cycle? I know you just talked about putting those steps in place, but what other things can people do to actually get themselves to follow through with these lists that they're making and get things done?
Yeah. Well, I am a fan of bucket lists. You know, I think it's good to dream, right? You might as well like have some dreams because lots of people have no idea what they want to do. So it's a good start. I think it's better though, you know, to make it specific. So instead of like, my dream is to like travel the world and fall in love and make a lot of money, like let's get specific about, you know, what this is. And then maybe the other thing is let's think about your list. Like what really is your list? Because often, you know, those lists are kind of just cobbled together based on like, here are the top 100 things that people want to do. Like which one?
Something from BuzzFeed. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a BuzzFeed thing. And like, who wants to do that stuff? You know, one of the principles of the book is that your passion or your hobby, whatever you're really excited about, it doesn't have to make sense to anyone else. It doesn't have to be on anybody else's list. You know, like I said, some people didn't care about, you know, going to every country in the world. There's a story of Scott Young. You might know Scott.
Yeah.
You know, he mastered the MIT computer science curriculum, the 4-year curriculum in 1 year. You know, I couldn't master it in 4 years, I'm sure, or 8 years probably, right? Like,
right.
I have no interest in that. There's this other story of a train enthusiast. You know, I don't know if you like trains. How many people in the nerd fitness community really love trains? You know, I don't care that much myself. There's this great video, which you can like Google, you know, train enthusiast video. And you see this guy like going nuts over this specific train carriage that he saw. And he's like, woohoo. And it's like,
I remember that. Yeah, absolutely. I remember that video. And the guy's going berserk, how happy he is. It's unreal.
And it's great. You know, you appreciate the passion. So the principle is, you know, it doesn't have to make sense to anybody else. It just has to be something that you're excited about. So when you're thinking about that list, maybe make sure that those things on the list are actually things that you want. I feel like we're much more motivated to pursue something that we actually care about as opposed to something that maybe has been implied or suggested by others.
Yeah, I mean, that's true both in a quest work, heck, in life. I mean, that's so applicable. And I think far too many people kind of spend too much time doing things they feel like they have to instead of spending as much time as they can on things they actually truly want to do. So this is something I've recently, you know, after reading your book and going back over my own epic quest, something I'm trying to incorporate more and more of. I love the fact that you had a deadline for when you had to, or you had to finish or get to every country by the time you turned 35. You reached your final country. How far in advance of your 35th birthday was it?
On my 35th birthday.
It was on the 35th.
Exactly. Well, the day before, technically.
Yeah, well, you got to leave room for, you know, a potential missed flight or something, right?
Yeah. No, the deadline helped a lot. A deadline helped so much because I think without that, it would have just been like a goal of like going to a bunch of countries. So it was go to every country in the world by my 35th birthday. Yeah, it helped a lot with the whole structure of like for 5 years before that. For literally 5 years, age 30, 31, 32, all the way up, I would think I would make a list in December of all the countries I was going to go to over the next year, you know, to keep on track.
To stay on target, yeah.
Exactly. And sometimes I would have a problem with one, and so I might like move a country around, you know, from 1 year to another or something. But yeah, the deadline absolutely helped. I don't think I would, you know, I'm 36 and a half now. I don't think I would have even finished if I hadn't had that 35 goal.
Very cool. So you've now been to 193 countries. I'm sure you always get the question, what's your favorite? So I'm not going to ask you that one. But instead, I'd love to know if there are any particular moments or particular countries where you experienced the most growth. I guess like the most, maybe the challenge you the most or made you learn the most about yourself while you're on the road. Is there anything in particular that stands out for you?
Great question. No one's ever asked that question before. That's really fun. I lived in West Africa for a while. I actually lived in Liberia for more than a year. There's definitely a lot of growth involved there, just in terms of being in that culture and understanding, you know, what life is like there. As for when I was traveling, I really had a good experience in Pakistan. I went there without a visa and like managed to persuade the dude to let me in. It was a crazy thing. But I actually had a good time when I was there in Karachi, and I met some local families and had a good experience in Kuwait as well. I went around with this guy who's like, I'm a Kuwaiti nonconformist, and I want to show him. he's like a WDS person now, you know, but obviously that was long ago.
Sure.
He was a nonconformist before it was cool.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Back in the day. Eritrea, I got deported. So there was a little bit of growth involved in that, but it was kind of scary.
I remember reading that story on your, whenever, what was that, 2 years ago? A year and a half? I don't know, I think something like that. Well, I'm sure you would kind of want to forget it, but...
Right, it's all out of my head now. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I kind of put the growth in two categories, right? There's the growth of, like, just the travel and stuff like that, and, like, gaining confidence, you know, confidence... experience produces confidence is another lesson from the book. And like the more I traveled, the more comfortable I became. I actually made more mistakes at the end of the journey than I did in the beginning. I think in the beginning, like I was super like careful to check everything, you know, make sure like I have everything lined up and everything's going to be okay. Toward the end, I was just like, I don't care. Like it's going to be fine one way or another. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. But then there's also like the emotional growth, like transformation, and just started meeting other people that helped a ton, because I used to just travel on my own and be my own, you know, self. And that was fine. But now with the readership and just the awesome people I see from Twitter or elsewhere, like definitely changed a lot of things.
Sure. So you just mentioned, you know, as a result of the blog and your community, it kind of helped you along the way. How important was it for you, you think, to publish your goal and publish a list and talk about it along the way and get people involved instead of kind of keeping it a personal journey? I know there are some people in the book that did keep their journeys personal until they reached out to you, you know, when you're looking for research here. But how important was it for you to make it public, and did that help you along the way, you think?
It's an interesting thing. I think it's kind of a two-edged thing, because you know, in the beginning, like my motivation 100% was just to do this, you know, for myself. I didn't care whether anybody like followed or whatever. It was my own goal. And I think it's kind of important to maintain that same motivation, like throughout whatever your quest is, because you can get really screwed up if your motivation changes to be like the approval of other people or the applause or endorsement, you know, of other people. That's really hard to kind of sustain you if you go through a difficult time or something, you know. And I went through lots of difficult times, you know, in the quest. And so I guess I always could go back to like, why am I doing this, right? Mm-hmm. Is this because it's a good career move? Like, certainly not. Like, certainly there's other ways I could probably be successful, you know. It took 11 years, you know.
Right.
You know, somebody asked me, like, did you do all this so you could write a book about it? I'm like, no, because I could probably write a book about something else, you know?
Yeah, that or publish some photos of cats on skateboards and end up with far more views on YouTube.
that's the reality of life and publishing these days. But so that's the first thing. I guess I had to have my own motivations, but it did change throughout, not motivations, but just a process, because I started publishing and sharing. And I think the documenting was good. I actually think it did bring a whole other element of community to the project that didn't exist before. And kind of at the end, like now I'm looking back and I'm like, oh, that was pretty cool. Like every country in the world, that's great. You know, but that's really not my greatest work. Like hopefully I'm going to do something better than that in the future, because, you know, like at the end of your life, you look back, you're like, well, I had this experience, but what am I really leaving behind? And hopefully I'm going to leave something more significant than just this one line about Chris did this thing, you know?
Sure. Well, that one little line encompassed 11 years of chaotic travel and adventure. So you were just talking about the importance of why and why you're doing this. Like, what advice do you have for, you know, you people that are maybe halfway through a quest or maybe 2 months into a quest, and after that initial excitement and I'm doing this great thing and things are going to change for me, and, you know, whether they're trying to lose weight or travel or build a business, you know, they get 2 months in and they run out of that momentum and steam. I'm sure you had moments where you were like 120 countries in and were like, still have to go to 70 new places. What the heck am I doing, and how am I going to make that happen? What advice do you have for those people?
Yeah, fantastic question. I think there's a difference between 2 months in and halfway in. It depends on what we're talking about.
Very true. Okay.
Like the timeline could be different. Obviously, there were some quests that were just a year long or something. That's fine. You know, I guess if I was 2 months into the 10-year project and starting to hate it, then I don't think it would have been the best idea to just suck it up and keep going, you mm-hmm. know? Like, I feel like people always give you this advice, like, never, you should never quit, you should never stop. But sometimes, like, if it sucks, like, you know,
why quitting can help a lot.
You know what I mean? Like, but I think there's a way to answer this. There's a way to resolve this tension, because there are moments that suck in anything. And I think the way you resolve it is maybe by focusing on the long-term outcome, you know, and thinking, okay, like, this moment in particular might suck. But what am I really working for? What am I trying to achieve eventually? Like, how much does that matter to me? You know? And so I guess if you still have the motivation for the long term, maybe that's a sign that you keep it going. And the other question might be impact, you know, like, are you making a difference? I mean, of course, it depends on what your quest is, but if it involves other people, you know, in some way, like, there's a story in the book of Miranda Gibson, this young woman from Tasmania who wanted to protest illegal logging. And she climbed to the top of a eucalyptus tree in Tasmania, and she lived there for more than a year. Like, she built this whole, like, platform there, and she, like, did Skype calls with classrooms around the world to raise awareness, you know. I mean, she, like, lived in a tree for an entire year, you know, and so she was making an impact, so she kept going. So I guess motivations, impact, if you're not having either one of those, then why not do something different, you know? Mm-hmm. But if you are, keep going.
Well said. I think when it comes to the nerd community, it's very easy for us, and me in particular, to look at a checklist and get really excited at checking off boxes and, you know, earning gamer points or doing things. And as soon as you complete a mission, getting so excited at what next mission is, did you struggle with actually living in the moment? Or do you have advice for people that might only look at what's next, and remembering that, like, hey, tomorrow's not really a guarantee, and you should actually be enjoying this journey along the way as well?
Yep, I would love for the nerd fitness community to find a way to answer that question and let me know what the answer is, because that is a struggle that I have. I think it's a common struggle among people who are list-oriented or, you know, kind of quest-oriented or task-oriented. I think it's a thing, and I have to remind myself to, like, maybe take the win sometimes, you know, like, if something's going well, just enjoy that. Right. And then, you know, you can do something else later. But I guess I would also say overall, like, I don't think it's bad to live your life by lists. You know, I think it's fun. It's meaningful. I like progress. You know, mm-hmm. Someone asked me, like, once, like, what's your definition of happiness? And you always get, like, interesting definitions back. And the one line that I heard from somebody else was, happiness is continuously improving circumstances. And I kind of like that. It's like, I'm making progress. I identify with that. So I don't think it's bad either.
Okay. I like that. We're going to shift gears a little bit here to something that you mentioned in the book that I absolutely loved. You talked about that anytime you go traveling, you always throw a pair of running shoes in your bag, if only to inspire or remind yourself to go for a run while traveling. How important do you think that mental trigger was for you? And how often, you know, what percentage of the time were you not interested in running till you opened your bag and saw your shoes and said, oh man, I should probably get out there and go explore?
Yeah. Super, super important. I would never claim, like, you know, 100% adherence, you know, to the practice, or even 80% or whatever. But I would say, like, probably most of the time. It wasn't just, like, taking them. It was also, like, whenever I check into a hotel room or hostel or whatever, I would always unpack my bag. It's, like, the first thing I would do, set my laptop up, and I would take the running shoes out, put them by the door, you know, just so I'd have to look at them. If I didn't exercise, it was okay. But I had to, like, evaluate, you know, whenever I was walking out, like, I could deal with it. Like, okay, I don't need to run today. I did a lot of walking or something, but at least I have to, like, see it. So it is something that definitely helped. Another thing that helped was, I think it was Dean Karnazes who first said this in one of his books or something. He said, a lot of people are really focused on, like, the whole workout or running a certain number of miles or whatever. But this is probably, like, a nerd fitness principle as well. I don't know. I first heard it from Dean, but he said, like, actually there's some real benefits to running for, like, 15 minutes, you know, or 20 minutes or mm-hmm. whatever you can do, you should still do it. And that actually made a big difference for me as well.
Cool. Yeah. So as a runner, you would officially be a scout in the nerd fitness community. So I'm sure inquiring scouts would like to know, is there any particular runs on your journey, you know, that really stand out in your mind? Like, you were just in some ridiculous place going for just a run of a certain distance, which would have been normal anywhere else. But because you were in this country or doing this particular thing the day before and after, that really stand out in your mind?
Oh, I had some great runs, like, all over the world. I remember I was training for a marathon when I was doing a lot of round the world trips, and I did like a 12 or 14 mile run in Brunei. It was, like, super hot there, but it was just really nice. I just kind of got lost in the moment and went out, and I don't even know if I listened to music or not. And for like maybe the first 4 or 5 years, I was actively traveling. I didn't even have an iPhone, so I actually had no GPS or anything with me. I did sometimes have like an iPod shuffle for some music.
No iPhone. What'd you have, like a tablet and stone and chisel and candles back then? What was this, mid-2000s?
That was hard. That was hard to like pack all those stones in my carry-on bag between that and the running shoes.
Right. So that's a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Big ass bag. They were always trying to check it. You know? No, I ran in like probably 80 or more countries, probably more than that. Actually, I don't know. I never added it up, but really, really enjoyed that.
Very cool. So let's skip to the end of your journey and end of this quest. Certainly not the end of your journey. When you landed in Norway, were you relieved? Were this moment of sadness that like, oh, this is over. What's my new identity? You know, how did you feel at the end of this, at the end of this massive 11-year quest that you wanted to complete?
Yeah. So those weird kind of feelings actually started maybe a year before Norway. You know, when I actually got to Norway, like it was fine. Like there was a bunch of people there. My family was there. It was a bunch of readers and awesome people came to hang out. But about a year before, it was like this weird thing. All of a sudden it hit me. I was like, huh, I'm actually going to do this, you know, and this is actually ending. And even though in some ways I was ready for it to end, you know, there were a lot of hard moments. There were definitely like some times where I wish I would have been doing something different just at certain times, not throughout. But I did begin to get kind of sad. And I was kind of like, wow, this is who I am. And like, this is my identity. And nobody can pronounce my last name, but everybody knows that's the guy who's going to every country. It's Chris, the guy who's going to every country in the world, you know, that's what, right? And I knew I didn't want to live in that identity forever. You know, I didn't want to be like Chris, the guy who past tense did something. Mm-hmm. When I first came back from Africa, it was kind of like that, like everybody that I met, you know, I'd spent 4 years in Africa, 2002, 2006, basically until 2008. Like if you met me, you would know like right away that I spent 4 years in Africa. So I was telling everybody that, you know, and that's, you don't want to do that. You can do that for like a couple of weeks or something, but then right. After that, you know, like move on. Like, what are you doing now? You know, mm-hmm. So I guess I was kind of like, what is my identity and blah, 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 and all that. And I think that's common. Actually, it's common for people to undertake a quest is like when you come to the end, like there is a little bit of melancholy to it. There's this accomplishment, but also like maybe a little bit of sadness. And that's just part of it.
Sure. So this is an interesting question. I know you and I are, you know, are both familiar with Leo Babauta and his well-publicized life of no goals and the importance and potential downfall of having things like quests and goals and checklists and things like that. Is there a way to balance the two, or is that something you've ever considered where you're like, Leo is a good point here. I've added some of that into your own life.
Yeah. I mean, Leo definitely has a lot of great points. You know, I've learned from him. He's a friend, as you mentioned. I also think he, you know, for someone who doesn't like goals, he's had a lot of goals in his life, you know,
sure.
I think it's not only about him, but just in general, you know, people who say like, I don't believe in goals. It's like, well, let's talk about your life. Okay. Let's, you know, in Leo's case, like he was a former smoker. He never exercised at all. Like he didn't have the blog and the books and the writing project. And he completely transformed his life through just a remarkable story. Like he, you know, he decided, I want to live different. I want to change my life. You know, mm-hmm. I would suggest you don't do that without a goal. You know, you can't run a marathon without a goal. You can't just go out tomorrow if you've never ran before and run 26 miles. I mean, maybe some people can, but those are just crazy stories. Like most of us, we actually have to follow a training program. We have to run when we don't want to run. If we want to quit smoking, that's hard. You know, how do you quit smoking after smoking for 20 years or more? I think that's a really admirable thing. So I guess I would always say if someone does that, like, and if someone is like, I just do whatever I want or whatever, I'm like, okay, what happens when you wake up tomorrow and you want a cigarette? You know, don't you have to like evaluate again, short term, long term, you know, benefits, regret, et cetera, all those kind of things. So maybe in some ways it's a semantical debate. Maybe it's like, you just don't like the word goals. That's cool. You know, maybe there's another way of thinking of it.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I remain pro goals.
you're on team goals. You know, if you were in a t-shirt right now, that's what it would say. All right. So what would you say to the, let's say there's a Nerd Fitness reader out there who is, you know, 300 pounds working a desk job. And this idea of travel might not be in the cards for him. And he still wants to read your book. He still has this idea of adventure. How can they get started with a quest? You know, maybe the thing of travel's not necessarily in the cards for them right now. How important can this quest and adventure be to them without actually having to even leave the own city?
Yeah, perfect. So a quest is a specific incarnation of adventure. Adventure is a value. You know, adventure is something that anyone anywhere can identify with and say, yeah, you know, I want something a little bit more with my life. Maybe I'm a little bit dissatisfied are discontented. It doesn't mean I'm miserable, or maybe that person is miserable. You never know. But maybe like whatever it is, like I'm looking for something different with my life. That's why I'm on nerdfitness.com. I'm trying to make some changes. So I'm a big believer in start with where you are. You know, I didn't start with going to every country in the world at 190 countries. You know, like I didn't start at one. I just started traveling. I started doing something that I loved. Other people in the book, there's a great story of Sasha Martin, who also at WDS, she wasn't able to travel, but she'd grown up in some different places, and she had just had a daughter and wanted to introduce an international perspective in her family. So she also had a degree in culinary arts, and she decided to make a meal from every country in the world.
That was fantastic. I love that story.
Right. But she made a meal like for over like 3.5 years, like every Friday night or something is like, you know, tonight is like Ghana night, and then it's Guinea night, you know, and then it's like whatever comes next. And I thought that was really fun and interesting. So anyone can choose this value of adventure, I believe.
Cool. So if they're getting started, they have this idea for their journey. Maybe they're traveling. Maybe it's weight loss. Maybe it's running a marathon. But they don't have any support at home, or they're one person in their group of friends, you know, looking to break out of the mold of unhealthy, overweight, and uninspired. What do you have? What kind of advice do you have for those people with these big dreams and these great goals, but don't have anybody at home to support them?
Aren't they on the nerdfitness.com forums?
They should be. If they're not, check out nerdfitness.com/community.
I mean, they're here, like they're watching this, you know, through your platform. So I think it really is important to find others who are like-minded. It doesn't mean you have to give up on your friends or family at home. But if your friends and family at home can't support you or just don't relate, sometimes that's the case. It's not that they're opposed to you. They just don't have the same worldview. You know, you have to find others as well. And I think you can do that again from wherever you are. You know, I connect with a lot of people online, and that's been fantastic. And then like, you know how it is, like if we've connected online and we actually see each other, you know, in so-called real life, it's really not that much different, you know, like right. it's really great. So I'm definitely a big fan of finding a community however you can.
Very cool. Well, that's enough of the serious questions. Let's move on to a few nerdy ones before I don't want to take up too much of your time. James Bond or Jason Bourne?
Jason Bourne, absolutely.
Why Jason Bourne?
No disrespect to the person who wanted to become the real life James Bond, because James Bond is a government agent. Like, and this is not like an anti-government thing. It's just he has all this support, right? He has like the whole support of like Her Majesty's, you know, service or whatever, like backing him up. Jason Bourne is like the lone dude, right? He's independent. Like people want to kill him. His own government wants to kill him. He's got to do it himself, right? So that's it.
Okay. Star Wars or Lord of the Rings?
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
It's kind of balanced, but Star Wars, yeah.
Okay. If you could have any I might know the answer to this one already, just due to your... Well, maybe not. Maybe you'll surprise me. If you could have any superpower in the entire world, what would that superpower be?
I think every person in the world would answer that, answer the first one and say, I want to fly. Like, I think everybody wants to fly, right? Yep. So I think you always have to say, what's your second favorite?
All right, good point. What's your second favorite?
My superpower, the one I actually really want, like a legit superpower, would be the ability to always know what to do next.
Oh, man.
You understand?
Yeah, it's literally like a strategy guide for a video game, but for your own life.
Yeah, like a legit one, right? Because we have so many things, like things are just kind of bouncing off all the time. And like, you have this opportunity, you got this thing, and you got all these things, but what next? What next? If I could have that, like, that would almost be as good as flying.
All right, that's pretty damn good. Do you have a favorite quote or words to live by or mantra that you try to keep at the front of your mind throughout the day?
Cool. I try to keep the value of gratitude, you know, front of mind. I don't always do a good job with it, but I try to have that. As for mantra, I mean, kind of like the theme of Art of Nonconformity is you don't have to live your life the way others expect.
Very cool. That's awesome. Hey, thank you so much, Chris, for jumping on here. You know, it's always good to connect and hang out with you. You know, I appreciate you having me in Portland. Whenever that was, like 6 weeks ago. Dude, you're the man. Hey, good luck with the upcoming book launch. Like I said, I read this yesterday cover to cover, and it was absolutely fantastic. Specifically, the section about Steve Kam, I thought that was absolutely enthralling. So,
yeah, we had to cut a lot of it, but, you know.
No, I'm just kidding. Dude, thank you so much. Best of luck to you on the tour. And, yeah, man, that's all I got.
Thank you, Steve.